Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the official Scotland podcast. We are here behind the scenes at Hampden and we're joined by a very special guest, a man who knows a thing or two about pulling on that famous jersey just the 67 times, I think. Christian Daly, how are you? It's good to see you.
Good, keeping very well, thank you. Yep, all good.
And I understand this is actually the first time you've been back here in a while. How does it feel? What does this place mean to you?
It's been amazing to come back, actually. I've loved it. It's just, as soon as I pulled up in the car on the way here, I just got all the goosebumps were coming back again. All the memories were flowing back. So it's just circumstance that's ended up me not being back again. You know, we're living down south. I think you just end up, you know, you don't. I keep out of the way of people, and I don't like to bother anybody for tickets for games or anything like that. And I just watch everyone on TV. And so I've just not had any actual sort of specific reason to come back and actually, you know, I watch the Scotland games on TV like a lot of people are and stuff. And I just, I actually got quite a buzz when I came back in. It's kind of fascinating feeling, actually.
I mean, it must be a place that's dripping with memories for you. I don't even know if we can see on the camera, and I know many people will be listening to the audio version, but over your shoulder there's a nice picture of you in action for Scotland. What does that mean to you to walk in here and see that sort of stuff? What does that memory bring back for you?
Well, this artwork that's all around is fascinating, but that game, and as soon as I saw that picture, I just took me back to, I think that I can see the wristband I'm wearing. It's a yellow wristband on the picture, and I think that's just after my dad had died, so I'd been injured for quite a long time. It's almost very coincidental. Probably the most serious injury I've had in my football career, just around about the time my dad died, and I was at West Ham. And I remember Alan Pardew said to me, "Go back and just spend as much time as you can." But I'd actually hurt my knee, and I was out for about 9 months. So then when I came back, it's just starting to get back into playing again. But 9 months or so later, after that was the first, very very early on. Waltersmith said, "Look, come back in the Scotland team. You come back in and get involved again." And that. I said, yeah, absolutely. And I think that first game was against Moldova, and I think we got an early injury. I can't remember who got injured, but I actually came on, and I didn't really feel fit enough to be there or to be playing. But I came on. But I was really excited. And next thing, I remember Cross come in, keepers fumbled it, and I've scored. I think it was my first thought. That was like my dad, you know. It was like an amazing thing to happen. It was like the gods sort of were working for me there, you know. Like there was balls coming on, thinking the keeper fumble it, and he's fumbled it. I couldn't believe it, and I was in. Yeah. So, and I was in the box as a right wing back. Even the fact that I was up there, I think I was just so excited about being in the team. I was way up higher up the pitch than I probably would normally have been. Yeah, it's a brilliant time. Same time as all the Scotland games. I mean, when I walked out there, it's like the biggest thing I miss about playing football is playing for Scotland. I played for Scotland from the age of 14, 15 to 35-year-old, probably 20 years of playing for Scotland almost every year, and at various age groups. And once you've done that, there's nothing else that you can do that's better than that. So it's the thing that I miss from my playing days. That's that. The rest of my career and stuff, brilliant, loved it. But playing for Scotland is the pinnacle, and nothing can beat it. And you know, it's the only thing. When I come out there, that's the, if I could go back and do anything, it'd be play for Scotland at Hampden.
And as you say, it's such a long innings that you put in. You're a pub quiz answer. You're still the most capped under 21 player. You turned out for them, I think it was 35 times. At what stage did you get to? You thought, right, what's happening with the A squad here?
When are we getting the call up? Interestingly, I was in the Scotland squad. I got pulled into the Scotland squad when I was 19 as a striker. Andy Roxburgh pulled me in, and it's away. I can't remember who it was away. I actually, we were 1-0 down, and I got stripped to come on. And when I was on the side, we scored the equaliser, and I'd sit back down. And I was 19, and then I had to wait until I was 23 until I actually played.
Wow.
So I do it 4 years later to actually play. So
and then by that
I
time
nearly made my debut.
And then you're not even a striker by that point.
So I was a striker by that point.
Who was behind that decision?
Do you know what? When I was an under 15 Scotland schoolboys, I played against. I played in the British Championships, and we won it. We beat England, Ireland. We beat England and Ireland, and drew with Wales. First game was against Ireland. We won 3-2, and I scored 2 goals as a striker. The second game, we drew 1-1 with Wales, and I scored the equaliser as a centre midfield player. And in the last game, England had Nick Barnby and Ryan Giggs up front, and I played in the centre back because of that. So I was already
even then.
I was already doing that. Yeah. Just playing different positions. And I think sometimes when you can play a certain position, it feels quite safe for people having your, say, athleticism at the back or something. I think it's very tempting for managers to put you there. It's probably a bit safer in terms of a career as well to play in those types of positions. So I probably I didn't mind doing the job for the team, even though you're not sometimes getting the glory up the other end. But I enjoyed the responsibility of playing there. And also, it's a good place to captain teams from and stuff as well, which I was really privileged to be able to do. So I just think I was already in that. Managers were already using me. When I went to Derby County when I was 22, and I actually went there as an attacking midfield player, and I think I scored 5 goals my first sort of 6 months there from centre midfield in the Premier League. But we got an injury at the back, and the first person they put back there was me, and then for the next year and a half I played there. So even though I'd already scored, and so it was very tempting just to leave me there, I think, when I was actually ended up playing there. So it seemed to be just a bit of a natural thing, really.
So the debut then, as you say, you have to wait until 97 for it against Wales. We won't dwell on it too much because it didn't go well as a result, but from a personal perspective, was there ever talk then, was there a hint, or was there an aim to make the Euro 96 squad? Was that realistic and then it came after, or?
Never felt like that I was going to be in that, I'll be honest. I went to watch the England game there actually, and as a fan behind the goal, and it was never really thought that I'd actually be in the actual squad, you know, the sort of the following year after that. I think it was 97, I think it was the first year that I played. So yeah, I just kind of assumed that squad was already as it was, and but I do remember being really proud to actually break into that squad. I mean, there's some players playing then, and as there always is with Scotland, I suppose, but you know, when you're in there with McCoist and McAllister and all these guys, John Collins, that brilliant pros and players, and so to break into that was quite proud.
On the debut itself, because you've already outlined just how proud you were to play for Scotland, making the debut, did it feel big at the time, or is that something you've retrospectively looked back on as to how big a moment it was?
I think probably retrospectively, you make these progressions, and I remember it being a huge thing to get called in to play, and obviously to play. But there's part of you sort of got to the stage where you've always made that demand of yourself that you're ready to play for Scotland. And I suppose it proved it in a way, because once I was in, I was in. And once I was there, I was there. I wasn't surprised to be in it. But I do remember getting the call and stuff. And it was, there's nothing, it's just hard to describe. It's absolutely amazing. You know, it's amazing.
And then a year later, you're off to the World Cup. We could probably do an entire podcast on that itself, but I mean, to sum up what that experience was like in France.
Probably the single best period in my football life. I've never experienced anything like that. I talked about it quite openly to players after that, but I could never ever get across what it was like to play in that. I mean, I just don't know if it's actually possible to do it. I used to get frustrated in subsequent years. I could feel like there might be the odd time when people were pulling out of squads and, you know, that sort of thing would quite easily happen, or people have niggles and that they maybe couldn't play, or and maybe I could sense that maybe some people didn't quite understand what it's actually like to play in one of those. But at the same time, would I have known before it? Did I know? I don't know if I would have could ever have envisaged something quite as incredible as that, to be involved in that entire thing. And it's one of the biggest downers, I suppose, about my career is that I never actually played in another one. I was doing everything I possibly could to play another one. I just was so desperate to do it again. Never just quite managed to do it.
Is it the obvious stuff you remember? I mean, from the outside, fans are going to remember walking out against Brazil, the games themselves. Is it the obvious stuff that sticks out, or is it such a wide-ranging experience that you've got these random off-field moments that mean maybe just as much to you?
I think there is. I think it's the games in general were just unbelievable. I mean, little things. I remember before the opening game, there's nowhere to warm up. So we were just in the tunnel, trying to find a space to warm up, and the tunnel's tiny, you know, but it was the contrast in us and the Brazilians was unbelievable. They had a set dance routine that they would use, and it was like all sort of like, you know, in time and to music and things like that. And he just had us just run up and down, doing shuttles up and down, like, and doing our own thing. You know, it was completely, they were all sort of, they knew exactly what we were doing. We didn't realise we couldn't get on the pitch to play. So actually when we started the game, the Brazil game, I actually remember still felt a little bit cold. Didn't feel like I was quite ready to start, which was kind of unusual. But it's just something you've got to deal with because it's the opening game. There's other things. So you're on the way to the game and I mean, there's a helicopter just, you know, 20 yards above your bus and the streets lined with Scotland fans. And you're just going, oh my God. I mean, this is just... it's just insane, you know. We'll be in the back in the hotel, and you say to the manager, "Look, can I go down the shop?" And he's like, "Right, just, you know, be careful." He's like, "Okay." So you're walking down the shop, and you can hear rustling in the bushes, and there's security guards like with their flipping guns, just tracking every move you make and stuff like all through. I mean, it's just mental, you know. It was just the setup. The whole setup was just incredible. You know, these little things you just remember, but and little issues behind the scenes with players and stuff. But it was an amazing time, and I feel so proud to have done it. But just a wee bit, God, I couldn't have done it again.
You mentioned the manager, and of course it's been a sad year for everyone involved in Scottish football. Just how special was he?
He's an amazing man. Craig Brown had my back from probably when I was 14 years old. He was the manager of the under-16 Scotland team, and I was I didn't actually get in the schoolboy team the year above me. I got to the last. I mean, it was in a sense it was a good thing. Took a couple of hits when I was younger. One of them was I didn't get in the under-16 World Cup team. I got to the last 28 for that team, and I didn't get in it. I was one of the ones that got left out. But then I was in the following year. I got in. I remember playing in that Wales game when I scored from the edge of the box. It was a slightly awkward finish I had to make from the edge of the box, and it was like an adjustment. I'd almost hit it with the outside of my foot. And I remember I'm coming after the game, and he just came in, almost spoke to me. He wasn't the manager of that team. He was obviously just manager of the 16s and stuff at that time. And he was just so positive about how I hit it and what that was and what that meant. And it was almost like any time was ever involved around Scotland, that he was always there. He was always there, and he was so positive. It didn't matter who you played against. He thought the Scotland team should be able to match any other team in the world. It doesn't matter who they're playing against. It doesn't matter who you're playing against. He says, look, get in behind him up here. You should be set up to get in here, get in there. He's not good enough to deal with you, and you do this and that. It was never about defending. It was never about, you know, it was all playing against Brazil, opening game of the World Cup. He's saying to me, see that Cafu, honestly, flipping run him. He thinks he can run. Wait and see you run. Get up inside him. When Kevin Gallagher's flicking on, or Gordon Dewey's flicking on, you run. Just get him behind every single time you can. Let's see if he's got an engine. It's only Cafu. He's like, well, we'll see, you know. And it's true. It's amazing. So you're just in that game, and you watch the game back. It's an even mm-hmm. game. You know, we should win.
Yeah. And it's funny, you mentioned all those sort of other moments that go in and around the World Cup.
Yeah.
Did you ever think when you were growing up, when you had these ambitions, that you would end up in a music video in the middle of Prestwick Airport with Delamitri? I mean, come on,
definitely
talk me through
not.
It.
Yeah. I just remember getting asked to go down and do it, and we just, yeah. And it's just fascinating to look back on. I mean, at the time, you're just saying, right, we're in this video and all that, and you don't understand the sort of implications of it and stuff, really. But I've watched that back a few times. It's funny. It's
I watched
really
it this
good.
Morning, just in preparation.
Yeah. And
but because you're a big music fan as well, aren't you? You're musical, so that must have meant a lot to you.
I remember saying to the guys in the band, said, I'd quite like to actually play on this record. Is there any chance you can get me in and so I can get my guitar out? And they were just ignoring me. So, what are you talking about?
But you were being serious about it?
I was actually being serious, but they just thought I was being, like, talking rubbish. But yeah. But no, it was, really, to be in something like that, again, it's just, I mean, it's crazy, isn't it? You're in the World Cup song and you're in the video and... I just remember being under a little bit of pressure to try and do a trick. I think I've not got much up my sleeve, but I'll try, you know, for the video. But it was really good. It was really good.
I think a petition to get Colin Hendry's grey tracky bottoms put in the Hampden Museum is what we need to start. And you've referenced it as well. The high of that period then becomes a bit of a struggle to make, well, more than a struggle to make major tournaments thereafter in your career. Spans a lot of that as well. I wonder if across your entire career, if there's ever an effort on goal you wish had gone in more than David Seaman's save from you at Wembley for the next tournament to try and qualify.
No, I mean, again, that was another amazing sort of that entire two games, you know. I mean, I look back on those games. Scotland were absolutely brilliant in those games, both games. I mean, even the first game, I remember coming off after that first game, we got a lot of criticism for losing and we got a lot of criticism for different parts of the game and stuff like that. And we look back at that, I remember watching it back at the time and we're going through it and I remember Craig saying, we're honestly a better team, really good players. But then obviously got to the second game and we're needing to obviously score a couple of goals. And that goal Don scored was fantastic. It just set the whole thing up and you could just feel it. It just felt like there was just unbelievable momentum towards a score. And I remember when that corner came in and I think it was Hutchett maybe flicked on it to come in. I'd read it. I knew the ball was going to land where it landed and I just thought, right, I just got to fling myself. If I head this is in. It's a goal. It's like, because you can't, it's so close to the goal. That you normally just head that, and you know you're going to get it flush, you've got a way for your man, it's just going to go in. So it's just about getting contact, and it certainly is for me anyway. And almost sometimes you hope you maybe scuff it a wee bit, but caught it flush, and of course David Seaman saved it, tips it over the bar. I just couldn't believe it. I just genuinely couldn't believe it. And it did, I remember after the game, it felt like one of those moments where I was like, what if I'd gone in? What if I'd gone in? I think I just couldn't envisage as I was going ahead that it wasn't going in. I just couldn't believe it.
One of those ones you watch back and still expect it to go in.
I just can't believe it. I just can't believe I didn't, you know. But again, And so I just wanted, because it's probably like a turning point for all Scotland teams that was it not going
don't
in.
Don't take it to heart too much. It's not all your fault.
No, I know, but it's like one of them. It was like unbelievable. But even in itself, that was an incredible occasion, that game down at Wembley, playing that game. And we're absolutely brilliant. I mean, we're just miles better team than England that night. It was brilliant. But just really sad that we didn't. But I remember finishing the game feeling really proud of being part of that team.
And as you say, it probably was a bit of a turning point because at that stage then, players are starting to retire. There's managerial change. Managers are going to come and go over the next period. And I wonder if you ever thought that a German manager shouting your name repeatedly would be one of your defining moments in a Scotland jersey. You've become a viral sensation even to this day. Bertie Vokes, Christian, talk us through it.
And I mean, the thing is, I do have... What I think was quite interesting about that is that I've always been quite guarded how I come across. And I tend to act in a certain way. But I have got that. See, and so I've got the other side, but I've always kept my other side. So, you know, it's... and I think almost every player's got a bit of that. You're going to have something where so after that Germany game, I was so livid. I was genuinely, and I still am a little bit livid with the antics that were going in that game. I was finding it very difficult to control my temper. It was really difficult because I felt like it was just almost like I had no chance of winning the game if we were going to just couldn't actually play without conceding a free kick for nothing. And but I remember coming after that game, I just had no idea. But that kind of thing, I was involved in that type of thing. That was probably quite a mellow one compared to what I was generally involved quite frequently in my career. It's just quite funny that by then there's cameras around in that by then, and there's at the end, and you don't actually think that anybody's going to ever hear anything that's going on.
But then if he lets you go though, it probably doesn't become. But it's,
nobody
it's,
would
it's,
know.
It's the way that you're getting the row. Like,
I know.
You know, like the
he's
school
telling
teacher.
Me off. Like, yeah, I know, yeah. And I thought, oh God. And I remember sitting on the bus at the end after it, and my mum has rung me. She's giving me stick. For my language, I started saying, come on, you know what I'm like, it's just one of those things. But yeah, but then what was quite interesting about that is that I remember after I had to go back in, I had to do an apology. And I was able to reflect even just before that. And I got an opportunity to say in the piece after it, when I had to go and almost do a little bit of an apology for language, that I was actually just really proud of the way we'd played. I mean, and I was proud of the way we approached it and how we did in the game. And again, it was another brilliant Scotland performance that night. So, but again, you just, these little things, they tend to follow me around a little bit. So I've had quite a few of them, despite the fact I tend to try and avoid it. It's hard to avoid it if you are actually just a little bit like that.
And that's the thing I had to ask you, that's the thing. I knew it would follow you to here today.
Yeah.
The thing about that period, as you say, is, you know, there were still high points, you know, real memorable moments. And, you know, we're here at Hampden and I'm thinking, Gary Caldwell, France, and how good they were. I mean, how special was that? Yes, it's easy for people to look back and bemoan the fact it didn't lead to a major tournament, but just how special was that day?
Yeah, it was absolutely amazing. I mean, those games are so hard. You know, I remember you playing those games, and the standard that you're playing against, it just feels so high. You know, it's so good, and obviously France being the best team in the world, and to actually go and to beat them on that day, it was brilliant. And I never forget. It's hard because like these are some of the best days of your career. And I definitely think they were well within their right to, although we didn't qualify at those times, some of those moments, I mean, not just for us but for all the fans watching and being part of that, it's Scotland have always produced some of them. And it's fascinating being involved in it, being part of a country like what we are that produces those moments, you know. And we do that. But every Scotland team I've ever played with, I always felt we were capable of that. We could beat anybody on our day. And we did some amazing results, you know, so over the time that I was playing. Just a pity we didn't get to another championship. But.
And you worked with some special managers though, because we've already mentioned Craig Brown, and again to repeat a line I said earlier, you could do a full podcast on him and others as well. So I wonder, because you worked with Walter Smith not only international level but club level as well, what he meant to you, and if there are any sort of stories that spring to mind.
Walter was my coach as a boy. I mean, so when I was at Dundee United, every Monday night we'd have Dundee United training, even though it was like a you played with your boys' club, but you went training. He was one of the ones that took it on a Monday night, and he was brilliant with me. And he basically, again, he's one of these guys that had my back right throughout my entire career. And he ended up the obviously Scotland manager, and he picked me to play for Scotland, and he was just brilliant. And then eventually went and played for him at Rangers, which was, again, because I knew what he was like in a club as special as Rangers. I wanted to go and savour what it would be like to play under Walter Smith at a club like Rangers, and I learned so much then about having the ability, I suppose, to be able to express yourself with absolutely no strings attached, complete freedom to go for it in front of one of the biggest clubs in the world, one of the most the type of fans that are so, demanding on your performance every single game, every single day of your life. You have to, he'd absolutely demanded that every single person in that dressing room's character had to be that you could fully express yourself no matter what. And even if you were 1-0 down, 1-0 up in the last minute of a game, I actually got absolutely lambasted by Walter one game when playing against Hibs or something. And I remember I didn't make an overlap in the last minute, but we were 1-0 up, so I was trying to protect the, and he just come in after it. And he made a point of having a go at me. He was a senior player. But he was basically saying, nobody at this football club ever doesn't make that overlap in the last minute, even if you're 1-0 up. Everybody goes for it from the first minute to last. And I don't want to win 1-0. I want to win 2-0 or 3-0. And we will score in the last minute way more than what we'll ever concede. He said, so you never, at this club, you never don't go. I was like, fair enough. And from that day on, I took that with me throughout the remainder of my career. Maybe played for another 3 years or something after that. But if I manage the team, I'd be like that. I'm saying, you just never stop going. Because you're in no doubt. You're just in no doubt what you're doing. You're not being careful. You're just literally playing your best of your ability and you're going for it every single time. And it's a brilliant way to play. It's so rewarding, you know.
When it ticks towards the end of that Scotland career, I think the last goal comes against Lithuania, final appearance away against the Czech Republic. Every player's different circumstances. I assume you don't know it's your last appearance for Scotland at that point. I don't suppose many people do. So what's that, that like?
It's a strange way to finish, I would say. I never retired, you know. And it's a kind of funny thing. I went to play for Charlton, but we're only playing in League One. And I'd left Rangers. I think I was maybe 36 when I went there. And I played that for 2 years up till I was nearly 39 when I finished. But I probably had two of my best footballing years of my career there. In terms of the standard of my performance for 2 years and how I was playing. Trouble is, you're playing in League One. In the back of my mind, I always wondered if I'd get another call-up, if somebody got injured or whatever like that, because I could easily have jumped in and played, and I was hoping to maybe get one more. I'd love to have got one more because I think I could easily have done it. I think some of the best, all my testing and all that was really high. In terms of my physical abilities and stuff, I still managed to keep them going really well. So it wasn't like I couldn't run or anything. I was just getting through the games. I was actually hitting some numbers that I hadn't hit for a long time, I'd worked the game out a bit by then. So. That was the only thing I was a bit disappointed in. I'd quite like to have won maybe one more game. Even to know it was my last game would have been maybe quite nice.
And just overlap constantly for 90 minutes, just to throw caution to the wind.
Just go for it, yeah.
What were those final memories like then, whether it is the kind of last goal, the last appearance? Because it feels like by that time, the fans loved you because of the service that you had given to Scotland. Is that something you felt?
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose this part of you are aware, you're sort of like older in the squad then, and if you're starting to be a little bit more times on the bench and stuff, they're definitely kind of bringing some younger players in and stuff. I'll never forget my goals, all my goals for Scotland. I mean, so proud. I think I got 6 goals for Scotland, I think I got, and it's pretty cool. I mean, if you told me when I was a boy that one day you're playing the garden with your brothers and stuff and your dad, one day you're going to go and you're going to play 67 times for your country and you're going to score 6 goals, and you just go, that's flipping unbelievable. I mean, that is just, it doesn't really get much better for me, you know, growing up, than for that to have happened to me. So in the end, I'd like to have another game, but I'm so lucky.
Just the 67.
35 under 21s. How many under 15s, 16s, 18s, 19s, 20s? I don't know. I'm lucky. It fell well. I had a lot of people looking after me. A lot of people had my back. Like some of these managers you've talked about, they're always there for me, right? From the age of young teenager all the way through. And special people. And I'd be very fortunate.
And now, of course, we see a well-trodden path sometimes for former players, kind of coaching, maybe media, and you've chosen something, you know, pretty different, which you're extremely passionate about. For those who maybe don't know, and you say you stay down south and you try and you're trying to stay out of the way a bit. What are you up to? Sum it up if you can.
Well, I've always been athletic type. I come from an athletic background, and I actually, as I was playing, I was always interested in the human physiology, and I would win all the testing and within football clubs and things like that. So I always carried that, even if people didn't realise it was that, I always carried that side of me, and I was always really interested in it, what that was and what that meant. And so consequently, I went and coached athletes from about the age of 30. I was actually coaching athletes down in Chelmsford, all distances, some of who go on represent Great Britain and things like that. So it was a great experience to have done that. But I was always interested in human physiology. And as I was doing that, I was starting to gain this understanding of the fact that I could see that the best athletes we had were the ones that were the healthiest. And at that time, there was a very much, and it's the same now to a certain extent, and I'd come from it myself. There was a no pain, no gain type of culture where people just pushed really, really hard. And I was seeing some people were coming through it, like I did in football. You come through even though it's hard and it's very high intensity and all that. But there's a lot of waste. So there's a lot of people don't make it. And 99% of people don't. And you tend to see them having real problems and issues. But I was never the type of person that held anyone in any more esteem than anyone else. So I would always look after those who were maybe not representing their country or were having issues or whatever, no different to them than the ones who were actually going on and gaining certain honours and things like that. What I realised was that looking after these people's actual health by just slowing them down, starting to track what was going on with them a little bit more, starting to work on what was more like a baseline physiology, it was actually getting them healthy. As soon as they got healthy, they actually started to run PBs. This is really interesting. So I started to see the opposite to this no pain, no gain type of mentality. And this kind of almost like regulation of the stress within their life and also within their training, and just optimising that rather than thinking the more harder you can do, the better, because only certain people can tolerate that. And what you find with some of these other athletes and stuff, we're actually starting to compete with the ones who were seen as being the elite. I started to realise that this was probably quite relevant in all walks of life. And this is like a general human physiology that there is there that's basically under what human health is. And that's the kind of optimal state we want to be in. So from there, I started to look after their parents. Sometimes they'd have certain conditions, say, okay, come in, and we could start to look at that. We could train them, we could monitor them, we could advise them on the nutrition, we could advise them on the stress and things. And over time, I just ended up did my sports science degree, which obviously I was able to hone it using sort of a lot of the stuff that I'd been working on myself in my football career and all these different ways of thinking about it and stuff like that. And then I started to basically decide to start a practice where I'd actually create like a studio. They could come to me and say, look, I've got type 2 diabetes, or I've got heart disease, or I've got Parkinson's, or a condition. He said, I'm on this medication, that medication, doing this, I'm eating this, I'm doing this. But look, is there anybody help me to get to the root cause of this that can improve my symptoms, or I can take me off of medications and help do that? It's like, that's what I built. I've made something like that. So that's who I look after, those types of people every day. I've actually never advertised. So you've got a membership. I've never advertised. We're going to start to do a little bit more of that and get out there now, because we've honed it down to something it's almost like the treatment and prevention of metabolic health conditions with nutrition and exercise. It's also enhances athleticism. It's like an anti-aging type system that we've got, keeps people young for longer off of medications. And in our world, when we get everybody healthy, they don't have type 2 diabetes anymore. We take everyone into remission on that who's come in, that type of thing. So that's been absolutely fascinating. We've made it really simple. We've got a nutritional system that we've developed. We've got we work on people's strength. Almost it's like a human strength score, and we get people lean, strong. And then we actually develop the aerobic system eventually as well, if they want to do stuff like that. And you're right, I'm really, really passionate about it. I live like that myself, and it's been highly, highly rewarding. But it's been as rewarding as anything else I've done in my life. And again, me looking after an athlete who gains international honour, it's no different if I've got a guy who's 53-year-old, he's had a heart attack, now got type 2 diabetes, but he goes into remission. See, it's like amazing. It's like an amazing thing to be able to do.
That's like a gold medal.
Ah, yeah. It's an amazing thing. But I think it can be. I think it's the type of thing that's so profound. I think it can be huge, and not in terms of like huge in terms of me. It's in terms of the population having a place to go where like you get to the root cause of what actual people's physical health base is, where their metabolic health is. What is that then? It's very simple to put measures in that can help that, but they can easily be rectified if the right type of information was out there, and you get to the root cause of these things with what you do yourself. It's almost a way that the body can self-regulate, it can almost self-heal. You put certain measures in, it's dead simple, and you can take people back to this baseline. And once they've learned it, and they can use it forever. And I think, so that's what we're trying to do, educate people on that. And I think now it's time for us to get out there and start working with people on that and to let people see what it is we do now that we've actually nailed it.
Brilliant. Well, we wish you well, and we hope it's not 16 years again before we see you back. No, thoroughly enjoyed it. We wish you well with the future. Brilliant Scotland stories as well. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Thank you.